We have Dr. Shola Oloriomi on the line, and we'll be talking to him and taking a look at Fela Anikulapokuti from the perspective of a philosopher. All right, Dr. Oloriomi, are you with us here?
Aye, aye. Good afternoon, sir.
All right, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Well, as good as it can be, like COVID.
Okay, yeah. As good as COVID allows. All right. We are having a swell time here in the studios of Spirit of Nigeria Radio, Studio Busi. We are enjoying our celebrations of Fela Anikulapokuti. 23rd Memorial Anniversary can only happen on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. All right, I have Iyemi here with me. You want to say hello to him?
Hello, Dr. Shola. How are you doing?
Iyemi, great name there.
Oh, you like the name?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, me no.
Oh, yeah, Bubuwa.
All right, let's start. Yes, sir. You read a book, Afrobeat, Fela and the Imagined Continent.
Thank you.
Think that was August 1, 2002. Close enough. This is August 2nd, 2020.
Yeah.
That's like 18 years ago. Uh-huh. All right, so first of all, let's get a sense of your perception. How do you see that, let me call him a brand, that Fela brand, before we now talk about your book and, you know, his philosophy and all the other things that are attached to it?
Isn't that a difficult subject?
Could be.
I guess everybody agrees. To talk of Fela, I just like to say there are no sure experts here. There are no sure experts. It's just it's so encyclopedic. Like the story of an elephant, and you're asked, if you're a blind person, what does it look like? You can't see it. You touch the rear and you say it's a long rope, it's a long snake. You touch the tusk, you touch every part. It's so massive. So you just pick the part that you know, the part that you appreciate. It's, like you said, quite iconic. So what does that mean? It means he was unique. I guess later in the program we'll be talking about what makes this rare kind of Africa so unique. Yeah, we're glad, I'm glad, Nigeria, the Igbo people, the Kuti family, I guess the world, something touched this planet.
All right. I like the way you put it. Something touched this planet. And I say somebody walked across the land.
Yes.
And of course, with dance strides and steps that you cannot miss. All right, today we'll be looking at Fela, starting from his background and family. We're talking about his philosophy right now. And many parts, like you said, to the man. Fela, the multi-instrumentalist. His band size we discussed earlier with Chill. And of course, Fela the Prophet. And right here with you, we want to talk about Fela the Philosopher. Was he indeed a philosopher? And if he was, what was his philosophy?
You know, you define philosophy in various ways. Sometimes we tend to see it as merely academic discipline. That usually you try to study fundamental nature of knowledge, you know, reality, you know, stuff like that, existence. Especially from the academic side. Now, but if I said something like, I do not take no for an answer, that's my philosophy in life. What have I just said? It's a system of thought that you have thought through and you've come to the conclusion that this probably is a superior or knowledge-based habit of how to live a life, isn't it? That's the philosophy, you know? You can, in the broadest sense, in my opinion, say philosophy is just love of wisdom. Not just knowledge, of wisdom, you know? The sort of activity, you know, that I would say people will ordinarily undertake, you know, when they seek to understand fundamental truths about themselves, about the world in which they live, and their relationships to the world and to each other. And I think, well, I went through all of these things. And I imagine It's a great shame I missed. I'm unable to listen to what the family had said. I do not imagine to be outside the context of all of this coalescing into Fela as a very clear-sighted Pan-African philosopher.
Okay, so what would you consider his philosophy? You give us an example of I don't take no for an answer. For example, my own philosophy of life is too serious to be taken seriously.
Of course, you know, you can say this just in the sense of, the moment, not reflecting properly on, but with a fella, I don't take injustice as a way of life. I reject injustice. I fight it. I think it was quite consistent with that. He wasn't consistent simply by thinking about it. He wasn't consistent simply by mouthing it. He wasn't consistent about the way he dressed. Just that. He went beyond all of those. He was consistent also in terms of how he put all of this into social practice, right? Deploying not just his music this time around, but also his choice of how to live a life and, you know, how to relate to the authorities and power structure in society, whether in Nigeria, Ghana, Togo, Burkina Faso, when we went there, you know, Europe, wherever. So that is a sense of philosophy, and I think he suffered greatly for this. So that makes him also again iconic, like I heard you say. But I have a slight suggestion to say that the sense of no one, there can be no one again, nobody's playing music again and all that. So I would have been dead if that happened. No. I think Sister Iyomi may wish, or I'm sorry, to rethink that gently. To the extent that we have Femi Kuti today, we have Sheo Kuti, and we have a myriad of other direct Afrobeat type in the country. Dele Toshimi, you know, even our own very, very gentleman. Very, very gentleman, Charlie Boy. Yeah. So we have all strands of very direct Afrobeat. But even younger people who sample, who are doing the rap in the country, and they sample the fella habit. Not necessarily in the full measure, but it's an extension. But that's not just all. When you go into the black diaspora, when you go into the United States, you go to Europe, you go to UK, across Switzerland and all, beyond even black people and Africans, but also other people who think there are structures to be contested in society. There are powers and authorities that stifle your dream. There are imaginary people who try to kill dreams, people who try to sell the environment, the people who violate this planet, all of them. They deploy this. They deploy this in all parts of the world. So I think that syncs more with what you said earlier, both of you, concerning the fact that it's a global phenomenon.
Yeah.
And I think this is the extent.
I would like to ask, or rather, first and foremost, let me say that, let me borrow your word when I said that we don't play music anymore. Fela is unique. You said that as well. Nobody plays music like him. So that was what I meant in those terms. That's fine. I would like to ask, this philosophy of Fela's that you talk about his sticking to injustice and not being swayed and epitomizing it in almost everything that he valued, do you think that it's something that he has passed on? Do you think that it made a mark, especially as you wrote his book? Do you think that it did come through Is it something that somebody has looked at and said, you know what, I want to be like this man, I want to carry this through, I want to follow this, I want to fight this fight?
Okay.
Do you think that he started, in, for lack of a better word, do you think he started a revolution that has been sustained?
Wow. This is powerful, man. Okay. Am I allowed to step just the second behind? Just to give you the context of how I personally have seen continuity in this habit. Yeah. In the first place, don't forget that Fela himself came from a path of struggle. Fela also, you know, came from descendants of people who rejected slavery. Fela came from a tradition of people who, right from the time their land was being, you know, brutalized in slavery, they rejected it. They were the first abolitionists, the very black people. The abolitionists that we talk later in our high schools, in our books, secondary schools, HSCs, universities, and are not the primary abolitionists. The abolitionists, if there are no people fighting, they won't change them. If there are no people who change them with the hand, the fought. They chained them in the leg, they fought with their mouth. We chained them in the mouth. And today, they come out as George Floyd. 70s, they came out as George Jackson, Angela Davis, and the rest. So, this fight is going on. Now, just in case we think this is just a diaspora phenomenon, can I just say briefly? And all the struggles of workers in this country, all the struggles of oppressed people, students, all the struggles of minorities, how come that at some point they find a need to take a Fela lyric in order to pursue their struggles? Whether it's in my degree or Kiduna, students, and the rest of the workers, Akwa Ibom, Lagos, Abeokuta, Ibadan. Why? Why do they do this? So to the extent that they do this, and they're still doing this, to the extent that we're talking about it today, it's clear evidence that, you know, this struggle has not died. You know, it's evidence also that even those who are partaking in the musical practice, but I'll say something gently, which I think both of you brilliantly hinted at. Yeah, there's a bit of a change in the character of what is happening at the musical level. Now, please, let's remember the context in which Fela played and the context in which our younger people are playing now. Now, Fela played in an era when the earliest type Black Lives Matter were happening in Europe. You remember the 60s? Mm-hmm. You remember the late 60s? Remember, you know, all the riots in France and Britain? By young people, those same struggles, you know, were replicated even in the United States. If you remember the Black Panther, you know, and the rest of that, you know. So this was the context that Fela came into. And within the context of that, radio came. We all, even as a child, at least, I picked a bit of it. At least I remember having in early high school read, you know, the 70, you know, books by certain members of Malcolm X, George Jackson, Angela Davis, and the rest. Now, Fela comes into this in Nigeria, and there is a post civil war dictatorial military regime. Fela confronted this. Now, at the continental level, beyond our own local dictatorial habits, you know, there was the internal colonialism that we call apartheid. Students who are here, they lodged in Fela's Calcutta Republic, I mean, the whole atmosphere. So, Fela brilliantly did something which is different from what the younger people now have the capacity to do, in fairness to them. Now, it was also coincidentally the oil boom era in Nigeria. Now, a bit of money for the middle class, while the elite were taking most of it, you know, and, you know, aborting the future of development in the country. So for that brilliant idea to do something, he created a micro an African republic, okay,
yeah.
which he called Kalakuta.
Yeah.
Then he also created what I call a cultural, musical economy, which he called the African Shrine, such that, you know, gate kings were taken, and he played sometimes even three times in a week. And, you know, there was a little informal economy within the shrine and then outside of the shrine. Mm-hmm. These are very brilliant, ingenious, you know, economic measures that Fela took, you know, in order to be self-sustaining. So Fela developed a cultural economy that made it possible for him to be slightly independent of pressure. Now, the younger folks now do not have those contexts as much. You know, the oil boom has gone. Forex, we reintroduced the two-tier exchange later in the 80s. We kept experimenting on all kinds of nonsense, you know, that put this country where it is today. All right? And even right now, you know, we're going to take a loan from China. We're going to take a loan from China, which some members of the political elite in this regime are suggesting that should not be debated, so that China doesn't get angry. Can you beat that? You know, so this is the era in which we are. And like I predicted in the book, that the future of Africa, I didn't see it then. Indeed, before I could write that book, I had to go back, you know, to that section of the book. I mean, before I could write it, and what happens to Afrobeat after Fela. I went to read, not just then, I returned to reading, you know, what happened to Christianity after Christ. You know, how Christianity became commodified under the Roman Empire. You know, how Christianity was taken from what you call the commune of the early Taborites, who believed in some degree of fear sharing in the society and the rest of them. They now created a very dangerous hierarchy in which, you know, only a few people, you know, had access to the information. And it took very late until even the entire congregation in the worship place could have access to the Bible. So it was only the priest who told you what he felt the Bible was about, etc., etc. And then the whole process of commodifying and commercializing, which you now see today, started then. So I said, wow, okay, what is likely going to happen to Fela? I looked at the economic structure, and it occurred to me that most likely, inability to sustain the communal life at the shrine, you know, and, you know, and the cultural economy that Fela had would necessarily lead the young Afrobeat practice, you know, to having to rely on multilateral, even multinational agencies, relying on government. And no matter what you do, the moment you are going in this direction, you have compromised something in the music. You have aborted. There's a limit to how far you can talk and all that. Fela knew this, and he deliberately ensured that he created a cultural economy that would make him avoid it. So this is what I think. So in a way, it's hampering them, the younger folks. But they are finding ways here and there in order to still become relevant. So I do agree with my sister that there is a challenge with, you know, the younger folks. But I just want us to get the context. And that makes it a bit clearer, yeah.
All right, no problem. We hear you, sir, loud and clear. All right, now, your book, Afrobeat, Fela and the Emerging Continent. Summarize it. 2 minutes.
Whoop. Summarize it.
Yeah, just what's the direction? What were you trying to say? What's the point? What's the focus?
Well, I was just trying to see how Fela used both how he used the environment he lived in, fused it into the cultural practice of the Egba Yoruba Saro culture, and the best of traditions of humanism that you could come up with as a basis, you know, for projecting an Africa that he imagined for the future. And that's why it was titled Fela and the Emerging Continent. I deliberately did not used the word fella as the first opening title work. And why is that so? I also envisaged that if care is not taken, you know, the concept, the word Afrobeat will be diffused into anything, any, just anything played in Africa. And there is a distinction between just anything you play in Africa. You know, it's not just any type of beat. It's a particular kind of beat, which is a particular kind of signature, with a particular kind of, the same way that you have a particular voice. When I speak, you say, that's Shola's voice.
That's true.
When you speak, I say, this is your voice. You know, when someone else speaks. So this is a specific voice, as distinct as classical music, as distinct as reggae, as distinct, you know, as all the other genres. So it's Afrobeat. It's a very specific, so we may have Afrobeats of a different type. But this particular Afrobeat is a very unique. It's both a social and cultural practice, right? Which is musically realized.
All right, thank you very much, Dr. Shola Lorinomi. Very, very happy that you gave us your own perspective, your own insight into the man, fella, Anikula Kukuti. And of course, much appreciated. I'm sure the conversation continues both in the studio and outside of the studio on the man, fella, as we celebrate the 23rd memorial anniversary, 23 years ago, the man passed on. Much appreciated. Thank you for being a part of the show. And I'm sure Iyemi would like to say thank you to you too.
Thank you, Dr. Shola, and I hope to meet with you in the nearest future.
Thank you, and may the spirit of Africa get itself infused into the spirit of Nigeria Radio Nigeria.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. This is still Spirit of Nigeria Radio. We will continue with our broadcast, special broadcast of the 23rd memorial anniversary of the passing on of fella Anikula Kukuti. We've been jamming, we've been bedouin all day, and we'll continue. But let me take you way back. Femi said earlier, Femi Kuti, that John Koku, one of his favorites, and therefore, let's play you this one, John Koku. It's still going on right under my voice, but come on, take it up a little.